This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday and you're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle and I'm joined by health and performance educator and author Richard Sutton. We're going to be chatting stress, and I think the conversation that we're going to have with Richard is going to be around stress, but I think a lot more around becoming optimal and just living a good life and understanding what's going on in the body. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019. Richard, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely great to be chatting with you. We did chat a little bit before we went on air, and I'm sure you can hear this is my radio voice. So this is not how I walk around in public all day. I think let's kick it off with a little bit of your background, because there's a lot that you've done. You've just brought out a new book. So who is Richard? Why did you choose this path in life?
We're getting deep and we're going in very quickly.
Go straight in, straight to the point. No, the reason being is I think it's what you do is so vitally, sorry to interrupt, what you do is so important in terms of helping people get the most out of their lives. And I wanted to basically just preface that so people can understand where you're coming from and why it's something that's been so important for you to choose in this path.
And you're so right in that it really is important to me. It's my life mission is to show people that they're capable of more. If you create the right systems, the right formats, the right structures, the right frameworks in your life, it's extraordinary what can unfold. So going back to my story, I grew up in an environment that a lot of kids grew up in, a very challenging home environment. And what I did at a very young age was trying to get out of the house. So around 13, I took a night job and I would go to school in the day and I'd work at night and I'd try and be at home as short a period as I could possibly orchestrate. And it went on like that for many, many years. And you can imagine a 13, 14, 15-year-old who's sleep deprived. You're going to school absolutely exhausted. You're not participating in extramurals. You're not participating in sports. You're just existing and trying to avoid danger in many respects. And I kind of finished that period of my life. And there were seminal moments where everyone thought I was struggling just from an academic perspective. I was just downright exhausted more than anything else. And I go to have an aptitude test. I'm actually very excited for this. You know, you always want to know what you're good at because what you get good at kind of points you in the direction of your passion.
Yeah.
So I arrive at this office. I remember it like so vividly. It's a small little office, but it was a very famous psychologist who was going to perform the test. And I go through the series it felt like an exam. Yep. Pretty unpleasant. But it was crazy. I was like filling in form after form after form. And I thought I was doing amazingly well. I'm very excited. 14 years old, 15 years old. And I felt that the big reveal was about to come. The great reveal. And kind of finish all the tests, look at the examiner. He looks quite disappointed. I mean, it's a strange expression that he had, but I wouldn't get the results for a couple of weeks. So I leave the office thinking, is it an astronaut? Is it a physicist? Is it an engineer? Is it a lawyer, specialist, physician? Like, what am I going to, you know, what is my skill set? I come back 2 weeks later and he says, look, I'm sorry to tell you, but you don't really have any skill sets and you should consider a trade. And it's very difficult as a 15-year-old, you know, you're struggling at home, you're struggling at school, you're struggling in, you know, working at night, life is hard. And to hear, you know, someone say that, okay, well, you're not good at anything and good luck to you and I wish you well. He didn't even wish me well. It was one of those moments. And I say what was one of those moments because two things could have happened. One, I could have become a victim of his opinions and the current circumstances. Accept what it is. I become an object. I get thrown around, battered around. Or two, I can choose a different path. And it actually lit a fire in me. And the fire was saying, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to prove everyone wrong, that you're not defined by your circumstances, that you can rise above your circumstances. I didn't know anything. I didn't know how I was going to achieve this. But it really ignited some sort of like grit and persistence and drive, which I didn't have before. And I feel quite gifted by that moment. But then there was a second seminal point. And a lot of these stories I unpack in more detail in my newest book, which came out about a month ago, called Shift Happens. But in,
love
in,
that title, in the book, by the way. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Well, life, it's life. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. So what happens is I get to national service. Now, I didn't have at the time the education to go straight into university. I had to kind of really work to further my education later on. So I had to do national service. I couldn't get out of it like everyone else is getting out of it.
You're giving your age away, huh?
It was the early 90s, late 80s, and it was a difficult time in the country and a transition time. And the Defence Force was really strained. Mm. And I arrived at basic training. I was in the Navy in Saldanha, and I'm very mentally underprepared. I didn't know what to expect. I've been kind of living in this bubble, you know, kind of eating takeaway, hardly sleeping. That's been my reality. No exercise, no activity, and with the understanding that the environment's going to make me fit, whether I like it or not. But I wasn't ready for the mental and emotional situation. It was very, very tough. And the intention in that particular intake, in that particular group, was to make it unbearable. And there were a number of reasons why it was supposed to be unbearable. And week one...
I was going to say, sorry to interrupt. Were you part of the group in that transition time where they had dropped the national service time from 2 years to 18 months? Exactly. So then you were dealing with a lot of vengeful trainers and guys who were very angry. Yeah, so very tough
That's
time.
That's very aware. That's incredible that you know that. So it was a very difficult time in the SNDF. It was a transition. A lot of people resisting the transition. You're caught in the crossfire. I didn't want to be there. I mean, I would have done anything not to be there, I have to be honest. And week one is, I don't think I'm going to make it. It is so difficult, so challenging. I didn't have the fitness. I wasn't emotionally ready for it. I wasn't cognitive. Nothing about where I was holding was equipped for that experience. Week two, equally as bad. Week three, even worse. Week four. And there was a constant narrative on the base that there was this allowance. It was the 3% rule. It's, you know, there's positive 3% rules and there's negative ones. And the negative 3% rule at the time by the base commander, whether it was accurate or fictitious, I don't know. But he had all of us scared is that 3% of you can commit suicide with no formal inquiry. So if you want to, go ahead. That was the narrative.
And that, by the way, it's not a joke and it's not something to be taken lightly. And it's almost, I think, the sense that they wanted to push you to that point to see who would go that. Yeah.
But as an 18-year-old, you're petrified. You're petrified. And there were people who did go down that road that you would be friendly with and familiar with. And they would get discharged if they would survive. And it was a very difficult time. But, you know, week in, week out, it was getting harder and harder. My whole internal narrative, I can't. Too hard, too hard. Too weak. And I was trailing. And you don't want to trail in those environments. Stay in the middle. Stay inconspicuous. Mm-hmm. That's the rule. I didn't have the capacity to stay inconspicuous. And then what happened was, like any good story, the Springboks were playing on a Saturday. And they didn't play often because of sanctions or whatever unfold. And they were playing on the Saturday. And it was the first time in 6 or 7 weeks that the base was quiet. All the instructors were watching the match. All the officers were watching the match. Everyone was watching the match. And we had this opportunity as recruits to walk. We never had the opportunity to walk. It was always run to something that didn't really matter. And I take this stroll around. And Saldanha is one of the most beautiful, beautiful environments in this country. And I'm walking around this base, and the base is perched on in the most incredible position. It's got sand dunes. It's got these turquoise waters. It's like you never see this thing. And I'm looking around me, and I go through this mental dialogue. And for 7 weeks, it's, I can't. I'm weak. It's impossible. I'm not going to make it. And then all of a sudden, what happens is I look around and say, I can't go anywhere. This is the reality. It's not going to change.
Sure.
And I've got to start shifting my mindset. I've got to make the most of it. Whatever that means, I've got to make the most of it. And the only way I'm going to achieve that is I can, I will. And I'm going to. And right. it's amazing that shift. And I get into, you know, the Sunday and all of a sudden, just with this belief that you can, the power of the mind is extraordinary. I mean, it's really extraordinary. Already Sunday, there's a shift. A week later, I'm not at the back. I'm in the middle. 2 weeks later, I'm not in the middle. I'm in the front of all the groups. And it was such an empowering experience. All that transpired or came about through this mental shift. And then the physical shift started. I started feeling very, very strong, very, very fit, very, very empowered in many ways. And then an ecosystem was incredible. It was cold immersion into the cold Atlantic. It was running all day. It was outdoors. It was camaraderie. It was discipline, persistence, commitment, follow through, stretching. The ecosystem was actually very positive. And I kind of got to the 12-week mark, you know, the end of basic, or 16-week mark, end of basic. And I felt totally transformed. And I saw the power of the shift that can happen in your own life, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's driven by a combination of those two entities. And the next stage was the precedent for the next stage was set. What am I going to do next and how I'm going to evolve? Because ultimately, I want to share this experience with those who believe that everything was impossible and life was a barrier to happiness in many respects. And the mission was set, and I wanted to be in sport, and I set out on this journey in sport. And you know, what culminated is another 23 years, but another story.
So we're going to touch on that just now when we're back from these ad breaks. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm chatting with Richard Sutton. We'll be back with you after these ads.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Welcome back to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Engel. I'm chatting with Richard Sutton. And Richard, just before we went to ads, I asked you to give us a little bit of your background. And the reason that I did that is I wanted to preface where your experience and what led you down this path, because I think the experiences of really having a challenging upbringing and a challenging start in life can set you on such a good footing to build an incredible life based on one thing, and as you said, making the decision to do that. So shifting out of a victim mentality, I did three aptitude tests and all of them said trade, you know, and I went to TEDx as an apprentice and I worked on fixing TVs. And the coolest thing out of all of that was building the Jumbotron at Ellis Park. But, you know, realizing that, geez, what am I going to be stuck behind a television for the rest of my life, vacuuming out rat poop and, you know, replacing capacitors. And I'm not a fan of aptitude tests. And sometimes I think where you're told a specific thing in life, if you don't fit into any specific mold, doesn't mean there's nothing you can do. I believe personally it means you can do anything. And that's because the system, there's a fault within the system, not within the person. So that's what I wanted to get into. And now I want to chat about sort of that life, your the philosophy and the understanding of life that you formulated now, and then how that's gone into your books, into what you do, and talking about stress and life. And really, I think when we understand what we're capable of, and I love what you said about walking around the base and understanding this is your environment, it's up to you now, and then how strong you can get. And that shift on this is terrible to something, this is actually somewhere that I can thrive, and learning that our challenges, when challenges become fun and we seek them as part of our evolution, that's really where we can change our lives. So what did you take away from those experiences, and how has that formed you now in your practice and in your work?
What I took away, I want to just weigh in on that comment you made on aptitude tests. I think aptitude tests in the 80s were very much as you described. I think they've evolved a lot since then. In fact, I know they've evolved a lot to include EQ and other social components. So I think there has been this tremendous movement to the bigger person, or the bigger picture and the individual, as opposed to these models that were very conformist many decades ago. So just, you know, as an aside, but in terms of that experience, there's been many experiences, many seminal moments, but they've all culminated in one feeling and one experience. And that experience is that anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Right, you know, 100%.
Beings are extraordinary. I'm extraordinary. Human beings are extraordinary. We are all extraordinary. And this is something I've come to learn. And what kind of unfolded following that experience is this mission. I wanted to help athletes live up to their dream, live up to their potential. It's very hostile condition, very competitive, very challenging. And I enter this world right at the beginning with kids who had no aptitude, with kids who had little aptitude, with kids who had great aptitude, with adults who had no aptitude, and just working my way up until I find myself in a position where I've consulted to many tennis players, be number one in the world, winning Olympic teams and so on. So, and it was such an incredible journey where I thought I was going to be the contributing force, yet the ecosystem taught me so much about resilience, so much about growth, so much about persistence, so much about adaptability more than anything else, but also so much about this thing that we call stress. And we see stress as a negative. And that's crazy because when we get stressed, the most remarkable thing happens. So within a couple of seconds, I don't even think it's seconds, it's milliseconds. What we see is this rise in immune activity, about a 50% elevation of immune activity, which can be very positive, can be. We also then see the surge of adrenaline and noradrenaline. Also very interesting here. So we've got a 500% spike in noradrenaline, adrenaline, sometimes referred to as epinephrine, norepinephrine. Mm-hmm. We then see a few minutes later, about 15 minutes later, this rise in cortisol, stress hormone cortisol. And they will stay elevated for about 80 minutes. And there are other things that elevate, like serotonin, but I'm not going to go into all the weeds and all the details. But we have this huge metabolic, hormonal, neurochemical, cardiovascular, this massive shift. And what this massive shift does is it makes us stronger. And when I say stronger, not just stronger, it makes us 20% stronger. Smarter, 20% smarter. Powerful, 10% more powerful. Our immune defenses are stronger. Our oxygen delivery systems better. Our energy is better. Pain resistance, everything. We operate far better in a stress state than we do in an unstressed state. Honestly, this is the beginning of the set, because ultimately, how are we going to be successful in life? We're going to be successful if we learn and we grow. We evolve. Stress makes us learn better. It improves our cognition, makes us think creatively. Often our best ideas have come in the crisis and trying to find a solution out of the crisis. We have increased neuroplasticity, just new connections, new realities forming in the brain, flexibility on a cognitive level that is unscalable. And just ultimately, it gives us the capacity to change. So net result is superpowers. So we see stress as this kind of adversary, but it becomes this enabling experience. Now, everything I've described, now most people say, I do not feel like that. That, what are you describing? Because that is not my reality. I'm stressed. I've got these demands. I've got the long hours. I've got a lot of financial insecurity. I've got kind of work-family conflict. I'm torn in a million directions. I don't feel like that. What is the difference between that experience and a negative experience? And the difference is ultimately time. The longer you've been stressed, the more you start moving into the space of depletion. It's a very exhausting state. The higher the degree of stress, also it can tip you over a balance. So there's an optimal range where a little bit of stress is unbelievable, short-lived, these intense bursts, fantastic. No one's going to be compromised. But when it becomes protracted or too elevated, and the number one idea here is it exceeds your personal resources. When it exceeds your personal resources, all of a sudden, the system that was designed to protect you, the system that's designed to help you move over hurdles and barriers and obstacles, becomes the system that disarms and disables you. And this is now where we start seeing this total breakdown in your physical, mental, and emotional state, and largely driven by this hormonal and neurochemical recalibrate.
So I think I absolutely love that point. And to maybe simplify it, to me, it's like your stress is your best friend. But if you keep using your best friend and abusing them, eventually they're going to come back and sort of, it's going to be damaging. You know, your friend's going to stop helping you and potentially start hurting you. How do people manage that in terms of their day-to-day lives? I love the fact as well that you've touched on the physiology, and I think it's so important for people to understand that we are hormonal machines. We're chemical machines. There are processes that exist within the body, and it doesn't mean you're weak. It doesn't mean you're bad. It doesn't mean that you're not capable. It's a physiological process. When you can understand that and take that almost that guilt and shame away from what you're feeling and how you're feeling, you can do a lot more around it. What is the things that we can do on a practical basis that will prevent that overload if we're not able to really change our lives?
So the reality is that we can't change many of the external factors. The only thing we can change ourselves, and we can influence a small circle around us. The rest is beyond our control. To focus on that third layer or that external circle, it's actually, there's no value in it. It just becomes an overwhelming source of additional stress.
Yeah.
So we kind of look at our current set of circumstances, and I think it's very important to unpack our current set of circumstances. So we're living in a very complex time, a lot of change. And the one thing we don't like is a lot of uncertainty.
Mm.
Most of us are intolerant to uncertainty. And I don't think it's going to get easier. I think that any analyst in any field, in any space will tell you the same thing. It's not likely to get easier. And that's okay. We then have all the dynamics that are happening around us on a global scale. We're not independent of the world. We have the geopolitical tensions. We have the socioeconomic stuff. We've got even environmental. The environment has changed. 10 years ago, it was a concept. Today, it's a reality. And the implications are quite significant. Then we, in our own personal lives, this is how challenging the set becomes. We have expectations, either stakeholder expectations, demands from work, our own personal expectations, our family expectations. There's expectations around us. And we've got to reinvent ourselves. We've got to reimagine ourselves. We've got to be innovative. We've got to be disruptive. We've got to be to be relevant tomorrow, next year. We've got to constantly evolve. And that in itself is a strain. And then on top of it, most of us have relationships that we are supporting and relationships that we're building. So it could be in the family context. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not in the family context. Sometimes it's professional. We've got people who work for us or under us or with us. And that in itself is an additional strain. And they're going through things, and what they're going through impacts us. And then there's a final piece. And the final piece is we're human. We have our own challenges. We have our own stuff. We've got our past. We've got our present. We're anticipating the future. And we're working through it. And a lot of the challenges within our own space is on the health front, to be honest with you.
Mm.
So you look at the set, this cluster of things. And the world's moving so quickly, and everything's happening at speed. And all of this sits in our subconscious mind. So our conscious reality is processing 50 bits of information a second. Our subconscious reality, where all of this fits in, which influences our beliefs, our behaviors, our preferences, our reality, we're processing 11 million bits of information a second. So we can see that our reality is subconscious, and that is playing out in our well-being, mental, emotional, physical. So to go back to your question, is that the circumstances around us are very unlikely to change. We have to up-resource. We have to become better at handling the hard.
And I want to touch on that. We're going to go to ads. And then if this is sort of the suspense that you build up, at the end of an episode on your favorite TV show. You're not going to have to wait until next week, but people are only going to have to wait until after these adverts to hear this. So do stay with us. We're chatting with Richard Sutton, health and performance educator and author. And you're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Welcome back. We are chatting with Richard Sutton, health performance educator and author. We're talking stress. A great intro from Richard as to why he's ended up here based on his life experience. We're talking about we can't really control stress. But now Richard's going to give us hopefully a couple of pointers, and I'm going to say this, the answer on what we can do. So please go ahead, Richard.
So I think it boils down to a simple truth. Anything that we're successful at in our lives, we have a plan. We have a strategy. Mm-hmm. Yet when we're stressed, we don't have a plan or we don't have strategy. We're reactive, completely reactive. So what we have to do is start looking at this with this new lens. And this new lens is that nothing externally is going to change. We have to become better at handling the environment so that we can express who we are and what we're capable of. And that's going to take four independent components. Component number one is we have to change our mindset. The way we see stress, it's skewed, it's corrupted. It's not all bad. It's partly bad if you don't manage it. But ultimately, stress can be an incredible vehicle to everything that you want in life. Think about your degree. Think about your relationships, or everything of value has come with a little bit of stress. And provided you have the resources to manage that stress, it's a stretch or a challenge and not a threat. Everything kind of unfolds the way it needs to unfold. So we're looking at this strategically, we look at this systematically, and we say that, okay, mindset, we've got to review this mindset beat. It's not all bad. And we've got to park that. The next thing we have to understand is how do we behave when we stress? Do we become insular and remove ourselves from the world? Yes, we do. Why? Because the world does not tolerate weak. The world does not tolerate anything less than your best foot forward. And we can't always be best foot forward. There's this intolerance. I don't know where it emanates from. There's intolerance of vulnerability. So you've got a Brené Brown in the corner. They're shouting from the rooftop saying, you've got to be vulnerable, vulnerable as a leader, be vulnerable, model vulnerability. And I totally subscribe to that. So if we are going to be successful in stressful situations, don't hide in the corner, mentally, physically, or emotionally. Don't hide there. Step out, reach out, connect. And there's an incredible Navy SEAL saying. And the Navy SEAL saying goes as follows. When you feel strong, you put out your hand and you pull people up with you. When you feel weak, you put out that same hand and you let people pull you up. And we don't allow for that. We want to do it on our own. We're capable. We're okay. We're brave. We're courageous. We pretend we live in this kind of microcosm of delusion. And ultimately, for us to be successful on a molecular basis, we have to connect. The more stressful the period is in your life, the more you got to reach out, the more you got to connect, the more you got to talk about it, the more you got to share, the more you got to support others, the more you've got to encourage others, the more you've got to get stuck in community. That is one of the critical resource pieces here. And it's so often overlooked.
Are you seeing people connecting less, particularly given what we've been through over the last 5 years with COVID, now remote work, people maybe spending more time at home? Listen, I'm at home at my home studio rather than going into the actual studio to record this and connecting with people. And I think when we build connections, then we have the opportunity to stick out our hands and ask for help. What have you seen over the last couple of years in terms of connection and relationships?
So it's a very interesting thing, because a couple of years ago, actually my third book, I described some research on a very unique type of support, a form of social support where someone can just walk into the room, someone that you trust, someone you feel safe with. They're walking through, you're going through a terrible thing at work, you're going through a very difficult time in your life or relationships, or whether it's whatever the dynamic is. And you're sitting there and you're ruminating and you're replaying events that shouldn't have happened or you didn't want to happen or how you could do it differently. And the person walks into the room, they don't say a single word. It's called social buffering. And they might sit down, they don't say a word. And you're still going through everything that you're going through. And within a few minutes, all of a sudden what happens in our brains, the person who's going through the event, is it starts recalibrating. So the emotional networks start to turn off and the more cognitive, intellectual, executive networks start to light up. We see this recalibration of neural circuitry. The person hasn't said a word. They're just sitting there or they're in the room. Then what happens is you start expressing a molecule called oxytocin. So if there's a bit of eye contact, if they're within a certain proximity to you, all of a sudden we start expressing oxytocin. Oxytocin has remarkable properties. One, it'll affect heart rate. So you'll see a reduction in heart rate. You'll see an increase in heart rate variability. Cortisol levels will start to drop. Like there's a whole systemic recalibration. The person has not said a word, offered advice, comforted you in any way. They're just in the room. And then what happens is something quite remarkable, is that the oxytocin starts to flood a little bit. So we start feeling a little bit more confident, a little bit more self-belief, a little less fearful, a little more empathetic, a little bit more connected. And what we see within a period of minutes is this systemic and neurological recalibration in response to someone just being there, someone that you feel safe with. And that's what's been removed today. Yeah. So we're going through a lot of challenges. Yes, we can get onto Zoom, and yes, we can get onto our phones, and yes, we can have a video call, and yes, we've got access to these kind of communication platforms. But if you look at the way human beings communicate, so little of our communication is verbal. The things we don't understand about communication in terms of gesturing, in terms of energy and body language and energetic expression, that is somewhat, there was this one study that showed that 93% of communication is nonverbal. I don't think that's accurate, but it certainly sits within that category and that bracket.
Right.
So this disconnect that we're seeing through society moving in a certain direction, we see that in the numbers. And when I say we see that in the numbers, we see that in the numbers in terms of mental and emotional well-being. One in two individuals today are going to be impacted by a mental or emotional condition, depression, anxiety, or something else. One in two. Every second person you walk past is going to be impacted, either impacted or will be impacted.
Right.
The numbers are absolutely staggering. And I feel that certainly that's not the cause of this disconnect, but it is a contributing factor.
You know, it's profound what you're saying for me in particular, because being I'm an alcoholic, and my recovery started, as we call it, in the rooms. And the most wonderful thing about, I've got so many gifts from being an alcoholic. It's like my greatest blessing in life has been being an alcoholic, because it's given me the understanding as to who and what I am and everything that goes with that as a starting point of learning myself. But the fact to go to a meeting and sit in a room and not say anything with a group of individuals that are walking the same path, that may be complete strangers, and you can go in, not say anything, leave, and you feel much, much better. You feel that you've left all of that pain and that baggage in the room. Or you can open up and share, and you're surrounded by people who are going through the exact same experience as you. And I think it's the simplest form of connection, just to be in a room with someone. And when you talk about the physiology behind it, it makes much more sense as to why this happens. And I think, as you said, technology has allowed us to connect on Zoom, but it's never the same as in person. I always prefer to do interviews in person, because you pick up so much more at what's going on with the person and with the body. So I think just it's great advice just to get out of the basement, get out of the house, and go and be around people. What else can people do in order to reduce their levels of stress, but perhaps excessive stress, if I could say that?
Yes. So we have to look at it now. Now we go to the third category, and the third category is shutting it down. I think when we can control the stress axes, it gives us this tremendous opportunity to use it to our advantage when we need it. And then when we don't, so certainly at 12 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning, we don't need to be stressed. We have this capacity to turn the switch off. And we've got different mechanisms by which we can achieve this. So we have to understand that there's three contexts. Context number one is, in the moment, we're having a very difficult conversation with a partner, spouse. Could be about finance. Always a difficult conversation about finances, to be honest. But it's a very challenging moment, and we feel very overwhelmed. We feel very reactive. And remember, that sets off a cascade of events. And how we manage stress in the moment is different than how we manage stress when it's a hard week, it's a hard month. The next 3 months are going to be very difficult. I've got reports, I've got presentations, I've got multiple meetings, I've got to be traveling. It's like, that's a different set of stress managed in a very way. And then we also have a context where it is so extreme, you're in total overwhelm. Too many parts moving simultaneously, too many pressures concurrently, and it's very difficult for us to just cope with what's being placed on us. We almost reach a system overload stage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a different mechanism for that. So I'm going to briefly describe the three different strategies. So strategy number one is to alter carbon dioxide levels. So we get into that pressure situation, that pressure moment, we need to be composed so we can articulate ourselves. We need to be composed so we can express ourselves fully. Too aroused, we don't have that opportunity. Under aroused, we don't have that opportunity. We need to be in that middle zone. And in order to achieve that, all we need to do is a single breath, possibly repeat it a few times. But it's a single breath where we inhale through the nose, we inhale again through the nose, and we exhale through the mouth. And we repeat that. Inhale, exhale. It's known as the cyclic sigh. We do that a few times, three, four times. Most people won't even know you're doing it. You can do it without any sound, with any obvious actions. Now, the interesting thing about that breath action is it replicates or simulates when we cry. So when we're sobbing, we go, exactly. And when we're laughing, we do the same thing. It's we have that double breath. It's a way that we can organize our nervous system through this carbon dioxide reflex. So it's one of those tools that is so powerful. You've got a 15.5% state change. In my new book, I really go to town on the detail, how to apply it, where to apply it. So very powerful technique, the here and the now. Then we've got those situations where every single day is going to be hard. And you stretch to capacity. You've got a parent who's struggling with health. You've got kids you've got to manage. You've got work pressures that you've got to manage. Your partner, your partner feels disengaged because you're not around or whatever. It's not real, but it feels that way. And you feel alone in this world with all these pressures in these ways. And it happens to all of us all the time. Now, that situation is different. So in terms of using tools, we have supplements. Ashwagandha could be very, very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Ashwagandha, 60 days of ashwagandha, provided you have no medical issues. And if you do, consult your physician. But 60 days of ashwagandha, you'll see a 59% reduction in anxiety. You'll see a 67% reduction in cortisol, stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a radical reduction in stress perceptions, and your hormonal system will stabilize. It's one of the most powerful tools. So if that's all you do, it will work. But what you can do from a tool perspective is understand that the problem with stress is when you turn it on and then turn it on and then turn it on and then turn it on, and there's a repeated cycles without a recalibration. All you need to do is say, 15 minutes of the day, I'm going to recalibrate my stress. 15 minutes. That's all I have to do.
Right.
You can use slow controlled breathing from a methodology perspective. All you need to do is slow your breath, the number of breaths you take a minute, to under six. So you can do 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out. It's five and a half, whatever it is, but try and get under six breaths a minute. There's some techniques that you'll do 3 breaths a minute. There's a technique where you inhale for 4 counts, you'll hold for 7 counts, you'll exhale for 8 counts. It's a 4-7-8 methodology, also outlined in the book. But these techniques are very, very powerful in terms of 5-7 minutes later, there's a 70% reduction in stress experiences. You could go into a garden for 15 minutes. You could do a little bit of yoga. You could do a little bit of meditation, or try meditation. You could get into a swimming pool. There's so many tools that you can use, but it's a commitment to self every single day to shut down the axes and commit to that block in time. It's a ritual in time where everything is telling you, I haven't got the time. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm wasting time. I'm not fully engaged. I'm not fully committed. And it's taking me off my path and away from my goals. Meanwhile, it takes you exactly where you need to be, towards goals, aspirations, dreams, hopes, and a new reality. Very, very important.
Such absolutely profound and fundamental advice. We're going to go to ads. When we come back, I want to touch on just your experience working with elite sportsmen and just with now people in general. And also, what would your advice be for parents with kids in terms of the value of stress, putting their kids in stressful situations, developing resilience, developing tenacity? We're going to touch on that after these ads with our guest, Richard Sutton.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. We've been chatting with Richard Sutton, and we're talking about stress. As we wrap up the show, we've got about 2 minutes left. Richard, I just want to go into, sort of your experience with athletes, because I think that's there's so much pressure there. It's compounded pressure during the event itself, but it's the build-up, and then, particularly when people start to do well within sports, there's sponsorship pressure, there's all of these things that get put on them. What has that taught you about how people can deal with stress, and what advice would you have, unfortunately, I have to say very quickly, for parents about the value of stress in raising their children?
So, from a sports perspective, and I've also, the last 15 years worked with major corporates, listed entities, businesses that are expanding, restructuring, growing into new markets. And there's significant pressures as well. But certainly in the sporting world, I've seen the value of structure. I've seen the value of rituals. Mm-hmm. When you feel like it, you don't. The ritual is often what creates the transformation. And I think if we can apply it to our own lives, where we look at it, we zoom out, we try and gain a little bit of perspective, where we're holding, what do we want, who do we want to be, what's standing in our way, and we start to reorganize our lives and say, okay, well, in order for me to achieve this, let me put this into my routine, or let me do this, or let me get up a little bit earlier and spend some time in the sun, or let me go for a little bit of a walk, or let me do some breath work, let me spend some time with my partner, or let me spend a little bit more quality time with my family. Put it in the diary. Don't react to it. Don't respond to it. Be very, very proactive. Change on our terms, we love it. Change imposed on us, we don't. In terms of parents and the advice for kids, stress is very pervasive. Kids do not have, I don't believe they have the resources or coping mechanisms that adults do. I feel that upskilling in resources, training them to handle the pressures, and it's not challenging, it's not difficult. I'll give one example in terms of reducing stress. If you take a child out into a natural environment who's been really stressed and very overwhelmed, you take them out to a garden or a park for 15, 20 minutes, you'll see that a 14, 15% reduction in stress hormones. I mean, these are the environments that kids really thrive. It doesn't have to be some sort of formal instruction. So there's lots of ideas. Again, I'll just kind of point to the new book. It was written for this scenario, this situation exactly. What tools are easy, applicable, and cost nothing that we can apply to our own lives, that we can make this difference. So I feel that the acknowledgement, where kids are holding, we understand that, the challenges that they're going to face and the need to upskill, to prepare them for the future that's impending.
Absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Richard, really great advice. I said with another guest last week, I wish we had 2 hours for this. So hopefully I can poke Howard at the radio station enough that we can get a little bit of an extension on the length of the show. But really grateful for your time, for what you experienced, what you did with your experiences, and how you turned that from mere survival to enabling other people to thrive. Really grateful for having you on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I look forward to chatting with you next week.